everybody. Welcome to episode 407 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
Hi, Manny.
And this is a Superman Sunday episode. So if you've been following along with our Superman Sunday episodes, you know that the first six of them were focused on the Man of Steel miniseries from Brian Michael Bendis. And just this past week, July 11th, we had the first issue of Superman come out. They relaunched it with a new number one to celebrate Bendis joining the book, I suppose. I'm not a big fan of relaunches of number one. I think longtime listeners of the podcast will know that. It used to be way, way back in the day, you wanted a high number on the book because it showed that the book was good, that it could last that long. And so for that reason, there weren't a lot of number ones. And so when there were, people kind of paid attention. And that's why I think Marvel and DC both eventually started going down the path of, well, let's restart the title with a new number one, because it gives this boost in sales because people want to pick it up, right? There's very much something ingrained in comic readers and comic collectors that they want all of them, right? They want to read the story from the beginning, and they're completists, and they want the whole story. So being able to pick up a title from the first issue appeals to a lot of them. But now it's gone overboard. It's happened too much. They killed the golden goose by doing it too often, kind of like the boy that cried wolf, or whatever analogy that you want to use. And so I rather would have seen them just continue with the regular numbering. But I guess they kind of came to a compromise. They left Action Comics continuing with its numbering. The next issue of Action Comics will be 1001. Meanwhile, they're starting Superman over with a new number one. So the creative team, as I mentioned, Brian Michael Bendis. We've got Yvonne Reis on pencils, Joe Prado on inks, and Alex Sinclair on covers. I ordered the Adam Hughes variant. I didn't know what the Adam Hughes variant looked like. I just figured, oh, it's Adam Hughes, I'm going to get that variant, as opposed to the Yvonne Reis cover. I have to say I'm not a huge fan of either one of them, to be honest. I mean, Adam Hughes cover's okay, but it's just not, it doesn't, I mean, part of the reason is the background. It's so kind of plain and not exciting whatsoever. No detail at all in the background. Superman himself is flying up out of a phone booth that's exploding. That's cool. That's a cool visual. But then Superman himself, I don't know, the textures are weird to me. Like, his face looks very much like an Adam Hughes face, right? It looks like almost painted, but then the costume doesn't. The costume looks very much kind of classic rendered cartoony style. I don't know, it's just weird. I kind of wish I'd gotten the Jock cover, which is a watercolor painted one. That one looks really, really cool. But regardless, I think they're all good enough covers. But you know, Superman number one, you want
David Mack on that cover.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, David Mack, not Jock. My mistake. But yeah, it's a Superman number one. You want like I just wanted like a really cool iconic cover. Unfortunately, we didn't get that. So, in my mind, anyway, maybe some people would disagree. But yeah, I mean, we wanted to cover issue one. We've talked about on Superman Sunday doing some going back and doing some Triangle era Superman, maybe doing John Byrne's Man of Steel would be something interesting to do, because we could compare it to the, you know, most recent Man of Steel miniseries. That would be a fun exercise to do. But for now, just based on the way there were so many plot threads left dangling with the end of Man of Steel, we decided to go ahead and do Superman number one this week. So another thing I'll point out that I find very interesting is, because Dan Didio himself has come out and said that he feels like the recap paragraphs or pages or whatever you want to call them in Marvel comics. Like right now, if you open a Marvel comic, inside the front cover, there's usually a paragraph or two that catches you up with what's been going on in the story. And Didio feels like those are lazy. It's a way for the writer to cheat. As opposed to, you know, telling a strong story where somebody who's not familiar can kind of get up to speed based on context and dialogue and things like that. Now, it used to be back in the day, Marvel and DC both used to have recap pages like built into the story. Like somebody would be like, oh, I can't believe the mess I've got into. And they would think about what happened the previous issue. Or somehow during the course of the story, they would mix it in. It was in like every issue of Marvel Superhero Secret Wars, they'd have like a full page dedicated to somehow recapping. You remember that, Manny?
Yep.
So what's interesting is that although Didio said that they would never do it, here we go. It's not inside the front cover, but on this first page, we get, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 giant text boxes that basically sum up the entire Man of Steel miniseries in only six dialogue boxes there.
I love recap, so I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does really help out with new readers. Because, as much as I kind of agree with Didio to some extent, I think that when you do put it in story, if you want to do it really well, you do end up with those old school recaps like we saw in Marvel Superhero Secret Wars that just seem... Then it seems like, well, man, I just lost out on a page of story because you're dedicating it to recaps, and they can just seem kind of wonky and misplaced. And for somebody who's been reading it all along, you're like, man, I just lost out on a page of artwork and a page of story to tell me something that I already know. You know, I'd much rather have it inside the front cover or even like this, where it's just a bunch of dialogue boxes on the first page. But the story opens up. Superman's out searching for his family. He's searching for Lois and John. We know, if you've read the Man of Steel miniseries, you'll know that John and Lois went off with Jor-El, Superman's father, to kind of explore the galaxy and to get some perspective and some experience. And Superman supposedly had a way to communicate with them, but it was destroyed in one of his fights with Rogal Zar. So he's out. Space is big. It seems like kind of futile. And I think in the back of his mind, Superman knows this. It's like, man, space is huge. It's infinite. Even flying as fast as he can fly, he's not going to be able to explore. Who knows? He doesn't even know what direction they went in. He's got no idea. But what does happen while he's out there is he does happen to, you know, again, it's line of sight and he's got the telescopic vision. He does manage to find a Dominator Armada. The Dominators, for those who aren't familiar, are a warlike race in the DCU that like to conquer other planets. And he finds a Dominator Armada. It's headed straight toward Earth. I mean, right for it, he says. And this is great. He says, for years, the Dominators will wonder how their invasion of Earth was thwarted before it even got near it. Superman kind of lucked out and stumbled across it. So, I mean, that's great as far as Earth is concerned, right? They don't have to fight off the invasion. Plus, it's going to make the Dominators think twice before trying another invasion. Like, man, all we did was start to think about heading to Earth. Barely in the early stages, we're still, you know, millions of light years away. And Superman spotted us and came and stopped it. That's crazy. Maybe there's an easier planet out there, one without Superman, that they can go and search for. But Superman takes it as a sign that he shouldn't have been out in space looking around, needle in a haystack in the first place, because he really is needed back on Earth. So after he stops the invasion, he flies back home, and he's laying there in bed, missing his wife clearly, and we get a flashback to him and Lois laying in bed. And did you notice, Manny, that she's wearing a Wonder Twins t-shirt?
Yeah, I did. I was like, I wasn't too sure of it. And I was like, I recognize that shirt.
Yeah, the J for Jana. So that's really cool. But yeah, they're talking about work, and he just, you know, it's clear that he misses his family. And we get another scene of him in the kitchen sitting at the table alone, thinking of a time when he was in there talking to John. John complaining about having to go to school. He could learn everything he needs to know just by flying around the whole planet. So Ben's like, kid, I love you. You're going to school. So I love these little moments. I love that Bendis is still giving us some little family moments. It's what made the Superman title so enjoyable when Tomasi and Gleason were writing it. So I don't know. Maybe I spoke a little too soon. Maybe we're still going to get plenty of Lois and John in flashback. I hope so, anyway. But as I said, Clark appears to be pretty despondent because his wife and son aren't there. The next scene we get is in the Antarctic, where the Fortress of Solitude is no more. You know, destroyed in the battle with Rogal Zar. And Superman decides to make a new home. And I'm unclear of why he chooses the Bermuda Triangle. But that's what he chooses. It's kind of a little reminiscent of Superman Returns with Brandon Routh, where, you know, you throw a kryptonite crystal into water and it grows a new continent. Because Superman does bring a crystal from his old fortress, drops it into the water, and it does create a new Fortress of Solitude, which kind of looks like a cross between that continent that we saw in that movie and the old school Fortress of Solitude from the Christopher Reeve movies, with you know, where it was like a bunch of intersecting like crystal structures. So when you think about it, I mean, Bendis really has taken some of the classic Superman, I don't want to say tropes, but classic Superman ideas, I guess, or parts of the mythos, and completely thrown them out. And DC gave him carte blanche to do that, apparently. I mean, the fact that he got rid of the bottled city of Kandor, and now he got rid of the old school Fortress of Solitude with the giant key, right? That was the only way anybody could open it, was to put that key, and Superman was the only one strong enough to lift that key. And yeah, he totally ditched it. So I don't know. I mean, it's just a matter of another writer who loves the classic Superman wanting to bring it back at some point. Next, we see Clark at work amid the chaos of the Daily Planet. He seems to be kind of minding his own business, so to speak, and writing about Superman getting a new Fortress of Solitude. And then he says to himself, ego, and then deletes it all. Glances over at the latest edition of the paper, and the headline says, the rash of suspicious fires takes 3 more lives. And then his phone rings, and he has a message saying, Cal, do you have a moment? I'm outside. And it's actually Martian Manhunter. So he goes outside, he meets Martian Manhunter, and he says, Cal, I heard of your recent troubles. Shocking truth behind your home planet's demise. That's horrible. And he talks about how he's always felt very connected to Superman because they were kind of cut from the same cloth, so to speak. They both were the sole survivors of their planet, but not in exactly the same way, right? Like, Superman survived a disaster. Martian Manhunter was the last survivor of a planet wiped out by war. But now, if what Rogal Zar is saying is true, Superman is much closer to being similar to Martian Manhunter than different, right? I mean, in a way, his planet was wiped out by war as well. But what's really cool, what Bendis does, and I know Manny really enjoyed this, is during this conversation between John and Cal, Superman keeps having to fly off to stop these disasters. Which I'm not sure. The first one he flies off to, like, why is there some crazy dinosaur on Earth? Or is that Earth? I mean, it appears to be Earth. But he's just like, John's talking. He's like, hold on a minute. He flies off, solves some disaster. Comes back. He's like, you're saying? Yeah, I just want you to know you're not alone in this very peculiar pain. actually, could you hold that thought a moment? I need to go rescue people from a fire. Sorry about that. And John's like, I can help with some of these. Ah, this one had fire. John's allergic, or that's his one weakness, right? Fire. So then Superman takes advantage of asking him, hey, do you know where I could get a deep space communicator, or how I could contact someone in deep space without a tethered communicator? He's like, not without the signal taking years to reach its target. So then he says, it was nice of you to come here. And he's like, I wanted to present you with an idea. The world needs you. Clark's like, okay. Hold on. I'm so sorry, John. You know I can't just hold that thought. Goes and rescues the space shuttle being attacked by a giant astronaut ape guy. Again, I mean, we're not getting... Maybe we'll get these stories later. I'm not really sure. But when he comes back to John, he says, the world needs what? And Marsh Manhunter's like, your leadership. You and I have seen enough to know this world. It's beautiful, but it does not work. We're going to be part of the galactic conversation soon. Someone needs to lead us. The system they have now with borders and money and war, it's garbage. John Jones is calling our world garbage. He said, someone like you who's seen other better planets needs to tell the world we can be much more than that. We can be a global community, and I will lead you there. And Superman's like, me? He says, if not who, you. Could it be that the only thing the world needs more than Superman is Superman who actively leads the world into its future? A Superman who's ready to take this great civilization to the stars. And Superman looks very unsure of this idea. He's like, lead the world? And then John says, take over all of it and set it toward a future in which hope isn't just an ideal. But Superman cuts him off. Take? John's like, offer yourself. Watch what happens. Watch the world rise up. He points at the S. They want something different, something more, something hopeful. Think about it. If not you, who? Superman's like, well, it's great to see you. I'll think about it. John's like, but I know the answer. Well, you look good, John. I'll see you at the next meeting. And John's left to sit there and ponder while Superman flies off. And we can tell he's pensive. We can tell he's stressed. He's thinking about Lois and John leaving. He's flashing back to when Jor-El was there. And as he's flying at this incredible speed, all of a sudden he stops and thinks to himself, why is everything suddenly so... Wait, I know this. This can't be. Flies up to space. No, it can't be. The Phantom Zone. The entire Earth is in the Phantom Zone, where all of Krypton's most horrible monsters and criminals are banished. The Earth is inside the Phantom Zone. And if you read Man of Steel, you'll know a recent resident of the Phantom Zone is Rogal Zar himself. So next, Rogal Zar returns. So this is what I was hinting about a few times during the podcast of Man of Steel, where I kind of thought what was going to happen was Rogal Zar was going to be attempting to blow up the Earth with that device he put in the center of the Earth, which he did. But I thought the way Superman was going to save the planet was by having to shift it into the Phantom Zone, because I'd read some solicits that said something to the effect of how Superman going to get the Earth out of the Phantom Zone. But that's clearly not what happened. So how did the Earth get into the Phantom Zone? That's number one. That's obviously the biggest question of this issue. Then you also have to wonder, was that really Martian Manhunter? Because, I mean, regardless of what Martian Manhunter thinks to himself, I don't think he would present Superman with the idea of leading the world. It doesn't sound like the Martian Manhunter I know. And he certainly never would have used the word take. He's take over, lead the world. Like, telling Superman to take over the world, I mean, that you might as well be, like, screaming into a hurricane, right? It doesn't ring true to me, especially not with the way Martian Manhunter is being portrayed most recently in Scott Snyder's Justice League. And you know, that could just be a difference of a writer's take on a character. But, you know, John was very much worried about, you know, too much power and making decisions and all that, as far as when the object was hurtling toward Earth in Justice League One. So this is almost a complete 180 for him to be telling Superman to take over the Earth. So was he a distraction to talk to Superman while the Earth was being shifted into the Phantom Zone? How did it happen? I gotta admit, I'm not really ready for Rogal Czar. While I am curious to know if he really had a hand in the destruction of Krypton, you know, I've said before, like, visually, I don't like him not one bit. I think it's a terrible visual design. I think he looks stupid, to be frankly honest with you, with his two different colored eyes and his terrible hair and scars on his face. And maybe part of that is the fact that he got drawn so inconsistently throughout the Man of Steel miniseries because we had so many different artists working on him. He just seems like a mustache twirler to me at this point. So I really could have gone a good long while before seeing him again. But, I understand that it does make sense. I mean, you can't put Rogal Czar in the Phantom Zone and then put the Earth in the Phantom Zone and not expect Rogal Czar to show up. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, that's for sure. Phantom Zone is no place you want to be. So what did you think of the issue, Manny?
I was looking for a word to describe it because there's so much I liked in it. And then the ending, like, I was like, wait, what? So the word I'm going to use is I feel cheated.
Really?
Like Brian Michael Bendis completely sucked me into it. And it's like, oh, look, it's Superman being that family guy you like. It's like, oh, yeah, there he is. And it's like, hey, look, he's defeating an armada of aliens that are coming. It's like, oh, look, it's I recognize these guys. And then we're going to put his new headquarters in the Bermuda Triangle. I was like, oh, cool, smart. And then it's like, oh, remember those fires? It's like, yeah. I was like, we're going to get to it. It's like, oh, all right. And then they don't. And they kind of forget about it really quick. And then in the meantime, he's talking with John, and it's like, oh, these amazing pages of him fighting a dinosaur. Which, why is there a dinosaur there? It doesn't matter. Superman's there. I mean, there's a dinosaur. There's a dinosaur in Batman's Batcave. So there's bound to be another
one. Is it a dinosaur, though?
I mean, there's the Night of the Monster Men also in Batman, and then there's, you know, whatever. Okay, I'll buy the dinosaur. And then there's that amazing image of Superman saving families and even a dog from the fire, and then saving the shuttle. Like, just a really, really good imagery. And then things get weird, and it's like, John is like, hey, take over. And I was like, wait, what? What's going on?
It's weird, right?
Yeah, and then it's like, the whole world's in the Phantom Zone. And I was like, wait, what? And even that, I was kind of like, all right, it's a stretch, but I'm gonna let you have it because I'm sure he would have noticed it a while ago. And then the bottom, is it all the way at the bottom? Yeah, it is. The bottom corner, Rogal Czar returns. I was like, wait, what the heck? I was like, nobody wants Rogal Czar to return. Like, no, go back. Like, you almost had me, Bendis. Like, you were doing so good. And you're going to bring back this clown? It's like, oh, man. Like, I don't know. Like you were so close. And now you got to put this, why does he have to return? You're going to do him again in, like, Supergirl. And it's like, that's where he belongs, in Supergirl, not in Superman. Like, just... I mean, it's like I told you before, it was like so close to being that Superman that I wanted. And then, I mean, it still has that potential, but not with Rogal Czar. I mean, I would have even taken, I would have even taken Dominators for a couple of issues. Like, that would have been cool. Like, but he kind of dispersed to them pretty quick, which is also kind of cool. And I mean, just so. I mean, it's like the same way I judge movies, which sucks about me, is that the entire movie could be amazing, but the last 5 minutes could be bad, and the entire movie for me is ruined. And that's how I feel about this issue.
You weren't a big fan of the Man of Steel mini. You didn't really like
it. No, but it was really all Rogal Czar. like, I even thought that the whole thing with Superman's dad showing up to kind of try and, like, groom Jonathan, whether it's for his own purposes or he actually cares, I thought that was fine. The only thing that was dumb about it was that they kept, like, going back to that one moment where he shows up, and I was like, why? Like, just have him show up. Like, stop making this a big deal.
Well, it's not that his dad, that Jor-El showed up because he wants to make John a better person. And that's why, I mean, the real reason that Jor-El shows up and takes Lois and John away is because Brian Michael Bendis doesn't want to write married Superman with a kid.
Yeah, I mean, but married Superman with a kid is what made Superman awesome in Rebirth. And it's what brought me on. And I know that I know a lot of people, including the guys the other day, we were talking about it. That's what really brought Superman back. For, I mean, you know me. I before Rebirth, I really didn't read Superman, and it was that dynamic between him and Lois and him and Jonathan that really got me on board. But I mean, the fact that he keeps bringing back up and in the memory and thinking about them and stuff, I'm like, all right, you still got me, because you're leaving him as that person that they've already built. But I mean, just, he's like, right now, like, Bendis and Superman to me is on a really, really short leash. And I will drop this real quick if it continues to get weird. And if you don't start putting, you give me any other villain, like, I don't care. Just make it somebody worthwhile, not this Vogel Czar.
Yeah, I mean, Superman's my favorite character. I'm not going anywhere anytime soon, but yeah, I mean, it's been so far all of every Bendis issue, like, the story of Superman so far from Bendis to me has been a little inconsistent. Like, why was he so, like, happy-go-lucky in the first issue of Man of Steel when he was dealing with, like, Killer Moth and Firefly, and then flirting with Deputy Chief Melody Moore when his wife was halfway across the galaxy, didn't know where she was? Like, he spends the rest of the series moping around. That didn't make sense. And now, you know, here we see it again where, you know, he's kind of moping around. I'm okay with mopey Superman because it makes sense for the story. You know, I just wish Bendis hadn't taken Lois and John off the table in the first place. But it does make sense. But yeah, then this all of a sudden it's in the Phantom Zone. I'm with you. Like, why? It seems like he would have noticed that right away, unless he caused it. That's the other thing. Like, because remember, he flies off at like super speed, even to where there's an explosion. And then all of a sudden, so you can look at it one of two ways. Like, maybe somehow he caused the Earth to shift into the Phantom Zone with some Kryptonian energy or something because he's flying so fast. Or maybe he was flying so fast that he, like, went into another universe, another part of the multiverse. And this isn't actually his Earth that's in the Phantom Zone. I don't know.
It doesn't make sense because he went deep into space looking for them, and he ran into the Devastators, and then he goes back out there and saves that shuttle. It was not the first time the second time he's out in space.
Yeah, I mean, it had to happen after that.
And there's nothing to say that he, you know, there's no massive event, I would say, that he had a conversation with John. That's really what happened.
But if you look at the first panel where he's flying, right, after he leaves John, the background, the buildings, everything looks normal. He starts flying real fast. Everything looks normal, but there's like some blue light behind him, right? Then all you get, and you can still see the city, still looks normal. The next one, all you see is blue light. Then you see blue light when all of a sudden there's an explosion. And then on the next panel, it seems like that's where it happens, because the next panel, the background is all like cloudy, misty looking. And then when the city does show back up, it's kind of washed out, kind of ghost looking, right? Like phantom looking. So I think at that moment is when it happens. Like, there's the explosion from him flying so fast, And then the shift. So did the explosion cause the shift, or did he stop flying when with the, I mean, maybe it's not even explosion. Maybe it's like friction from him flying so fast.
Like, just don't give me some bullcrap story that Rogozar caused this from the Phantom Zone, because I will flip. just don't do it. Like, don't give him that much credit. As a matter of fact, I don't care. Just I don't know.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, man. I could have gone. Give me my 6 month Rogozar break, right? Like, I need some time to not have to look at that guy and hear him talk and just see him in a Superman book. So yeah, I feel like here we go. Like, we had the 6 issues of Man of Steel. Still don't really understand all of Bendis's take on Superman, and now we've had 1 issue of Superman, and we start to maybe start getting what Bendis's take is going to be on Superman, and he's going to be a little melancholy because he misses his wife and kid. And again, I'm okay with that as long as it doesn't last too long. And then he, at the end, he goes, "Oh, and by the way, Rogozar." No.
I get it. He's excited about writing Superman, but you don't need to reinvent the wheel. Like, just tell a good Superman story. There's already. I mean, you could use Toy Man for all I care. Just Parasite. I don't know. Just pick anybody else. I honestly thought he was going to start off with something like a classic CEO Lex Luthor or something like that, but I guess not. Because because he's so prominent in Justice League that there's no real point in putting him here also. It was done again, but like, I'm just thinking like, who, like, oh, you know what would have been great? Like, Mongol. That would have been great.
Yeah, Mongol.
That would have been really cool. But no, I guess not. I mean, I'll even take a Zod story to start off with. I'm like, all right, you're getting into it. You're gonna use Zod. Like, you know, fine. Mongol actually would have been good, or what if like the Furies would have shown up? So like, I don't know. Just I'm really much saying is anybody but Rogozar.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Definitely, I will say though that the art is spectacular. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. It's like most of that issue is fantastic. Like,
well, even like the last page, even the last double page spread. As much as I don't like the fact that the Earth is in the Phantom Zone, it's still an incredible visual with the skulls and the, you know, those pink like stalagmites coming up out of the ground and all the different like incredible color work by Alex Sinclair. The book looks absolutely amazing.
And then I don't know if you noticed this, but I noticed it for you just because I know how much of a big deal it is. Not a single panel in this book has Superman with red eyes.
Well, really?
Yep. Well, that makes sense. Not a single one.
He didn't use his heat vision. I don't mind Superman with red eyes when he's using his heat vision. My wife feels differently about that. I agree with you in that, man, a lot of plot threads were left dangling and we didn't really get any. You brought him up. Oh, fires, but not really. Oh, Daily Planet, are we going to learn about that new reporter? No, not really. Deputy Chief Melody Morton, nope. Instead, we're going to go into the Phantom Zone.
And we can go back with Rogozar. It's like, damn it, you were close. So close. But, I mean, like, there's really, really good imagery of, like, just looking at it, the book has so much promise. Just a page with all of the explanation of what happened before. It's a really, really beautiful close-up of Superman. And then of him fighting the Devastator ships, like when he's punching forward.
Dominators.
That was really, really cool. And then, obviously, my favorite one in this entire issue is him saving that family from the fire. That's Superman.
Yeah.
That's what he did. Beautiful. I mean, just overall, like, it's drawn beautifully, and most of it is really good, but at the same time, it's pretty vague, and then you go back to Rogozar, and you're like, he's like, he's not even in this book, but just his name on the bottom of the page was enough for me to, like, cringe, Mr. Maya.
Yeah, I think my favorite panel might be the Lois Lane wearing the Wonder Twins shirt. That is pretty sweet.
I know a lot of, I don't know if they had a, if maybe they talked about this at a summit or something where it's like, hey, draw your characters with other superhero shirts. Because I'm noticing it a little bit more these days.
Yeah, I don't even know what I would rate this issue. Like, I'd probably rate it like an 8 if you leave out the Rogue Al Zar, leave out the Phantom Zone. I mean, you can't really. I'm going to give it a 7. I'm going to say it pulls it down.
Probably that just that point alone, brings it down three points just because you're going to try to reintroduce Rogue Al Zar, which, like, I thought, like, it's like, oh, cool, he's going to go into a Supergirl book. It's like, yeah, that, you know, put him over there. That's great. And then maybe half a point also for the Superman Returns reference. Because I got that too, like when he did the Bermuda Triangle thing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, Superman Returns.
Yep.
And then I thought about that Kevin Spacey Lex Luthor.
Yep, just waiting for Kevin Spacey to show up.
Smoker, Lois Lane, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess just put a crystal in the water and it's going to give you an entire fortress.
Yep. That apparently nobody will be able to find because it's in the Bermuda Triangle, supposedly. Whatever.
It's almost there. He was close. So, I mean, we'll wait and see. Maybe he just shows up for one issue or something. No, that's wishful thinking. That's like saying Amanda Waller's not going to be in Suicide Squad.
Yep. Unfortunately. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe he won't be in Action Comics. Maybe that's where you can go to get your Superman fix.
True. All right, yeah. You know what? Yeah, I'm not gonna play downers anymore, but I'm gonna definitely be bringing it up a lot next week in San Diego.
Yeah, Brian Michael Bendis is not gonna be there, unfortunately.
Exactly why I'm gonna do it.
Maybe we can get some answers from Jim Lee or Dan Didio. We'll see. All right, anything else you want to say about this issue?
That watercolor cover by Mac
is, yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, just I want that on my wall, like on a canvas. Like, that looks really cool. I think it's the cape that sells it more than anything else. And the curl. But it's almost like a, like, you know, Mitch Gerard's a little bit, not really. But yeah, the Adam Hughes one, definitely weird. But you know what, I think what would have made that cover a lot better is if he would have done the sidewalk and maybe like a little bit of the buildings behind
yep.
it.
Yep.
Because you and I have talked about how much we hate backgrounds like this where you take the easy way out yep. and just not do a background. So I think maybe that would help. But yeah, definitely the body does not match the, I mean, like the neck is like really long. It's kind of weird. But I do kind of like the fist coming out of it. But yeah, definitely the watercolor one is my favorite one. And so not giving up on the book yet, just yet. But definitely the Rogue Al Zar thing, sour taste at the end.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available there, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Quick reminder, Mandy and I will be at San Diego Comic-Con in just a few short days. If you're going to be there, let us know. We'd love to meet up with you, hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard, take a picture, find out what you like about the show, what you don't like. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.